This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The details behind the Diddy indictment. Taylor Swift's stalkers. Jerry Lee trying to kill Elvis. Disgraceland dives into the dark side of entertainment every Tuesday. Follow and listen to Disgraceland on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yes, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. And don't worry about it, Sean. From the 832, does Reggie even know how to hold his tongue? No, I do not.
Awful teammate right now.
Don't worry. Yeah. I enjoyed it, and I feel like a lot of people enjoyed it. And if they didn't, it's cool, because it's a Friday, baby. It's a Friday headed into what should be a really fun week of all sorts of sports as relates to Houston. Luke Morrow in for the OG John Lopez. I'm Reginald Atula Figgy Fig. Get involved with the program by texting in to the show, 713-572-4610, or catch us on the Mokarem Injury Lawyers live streams, both on the YouTube page, Sports Radio 610, and on Twitch, 610 Houston. How you living, brother?
Doing well. Good to be here. As you said, I mean, it's an exciting weekend to be to get ready for in the sports world. Always love hanging out with you on a Friday and talking, especially tonight, about the Rockets. Warriors.
Yes.
Last time I was with you, we were talking about the start of the series, and now today, let's hope we can talk about continuing the series.
Yeah, let's do that. Let's jump right in immediately. Tonight, we have basketball, 8 p.m., Central Time, Central Time, and it'll be on ESPN, and we will see if the Rockets can continue to stave off elimination in this series. And you mentioned it two weeks ago, we were asking the questions headed into game one of the series. Now let's ask some questions heading into game six. Like, what can they apply from game five going into tonight? What are some of the other things that you're interested in, that you're curious about in this game six in this series?
Yeah, when I look back at that game the other night, I don't take much from the offensive side, because it was just, I don't want to say the word flukish, but it was just such an anomaly and such a great performance from the Rockets that I don't anticipate that carrying over to the next game, which of course is tonight, let alone now carrying over on the road after playing so well at home. I almost compare it to, you know, Jalen Green's big game in the series where he made a career-high 8 threes. And it's like, well, that's kind of the outlier. We've seen the Rockets play all year. If they had this offense all season that we saw the other night, you'd put them right up there with OKC as the, you know, the team to beat in the West.
For sure.
But we know what this team is. They're not going to shoot 70%, you know, from the floor. So offensively, I really don't take much. But I do look at the defensive side of things, because the Athletic put together a really good piece of breaking down the Rockets' defensive performance in that game five, and showing like how prepared, how ready they were, so it seemed, for what the Warriors were trying to do in that game. And they did such a good job on Curry and Jimmy Butler in that game that you hope that that's something they could take with them. That maybe as the longer this series goes, they start to figure out some things. And I know on The Athletic they compared it to like almost like a software update where it takes in all this information and adapts over time.
Right.
You hope that's the Rockets defense the longer this series goes. And I would also, you know, the advantage for the defense in this series, of course, would lean towards the Rockets. So I guess that's the case, is that that's my hope. That's what they carry with them. I don't take anything from the offensive side, but maybe defensively, maybe they've started to crack the code a little bit. And when you go back and you look, I won't bog you down with all the examples, but when you look back at all the 3-1 deficits that teams have overcome in the NBA playoffs, maybe it's a chicken and the egg discussion, but you always see the teams that jumped out to the 3-1 lead scored a bunch of points early in the series, and then when the other team erased that deficit, it's because they were playing much better defense, holding the team to fewer points. The Rockets did it in 95 to the Suns, and I think that's just a sense of you get to figure out your opponent over a series, you make the right chess moves, and you start getting some wins.
Yeah, and if this Rockets team was going to win this series, it's going to be on the strength of their defense. Hell, if the Rockets are going to win any series, the way that they're constructed right now, it is a defense-forward team. This team, absolutely, when you talk about their strength, Ime Udoka, when you want the identity of this team to be defensive. So I think you're right in that regard. And I think you're kind of highlighting one of the things that was big about Game 5, but in a way, almost on the opposite side, which is that the Warriors kind of got uncharacteristic offensively. Like, One of the things that they were trying to do is they were doing a lot of hunting of Alperen Sengun, trying to get some cross matches, some mismatches on with him on the floor, and he held up pretty well. I'm interested to see, like, if the Warriors do the thing where they go back to some of the answers that they had found early, because there's this thing that happens in playoff series at times that really boggles the mind for me, where, and I understand, like, series are fluid, things change with, you know, your opponents, so that does affect the way that you have to play. But it felt like the Warriors in Game 5 moved away from some of the answers that they had previously offensively. And I wonder if the confines of being at home, if having, you know, more threats when we talk about playing at home and your role players playing better, mm-hmm. if Pajemski maybe being more threatening because he's at home, if Moses Moody being more threatening off ball because he's at home, if those guys get going, does that then, you know, make it more difficult on the Rockets, a Rockets team that clearly has put so much of their effort towards Steph Curry, as you have to do, a decent amount of effort towards Jimmy Butler, and they've left some of those others saying, if they are going to beat us, then so be it. What happens if you get that where, you know, Brandon Pajemski steps up and he's knocking down shots again? And does that shift the way this goes? Especially because, as you stated, you cannot expect that you're going to have that same type of offensive night that the Rockets did have in Game 5.
Yeah, and that's always the fun thing about these series, is it is that chess match, you know? And so then you make an adjustment, the other team has to make an adjustment, and then now for the Rockets tonight, they have to try to stay ahead of that and try to make their own adjustment or react to whatever they anticipate from the Warriors. And that's something to take it to another sport, in football, they always tell you, like, from a gambling perspective, always bet the team in the rematch that lost the previous game. And actually, we see this a lot in the NBA, too, with the zigzag theory of you just alternate wins. One mm-hmm. team wins, and they lose the next game. But the idea is the advantage is always to the team that lost because they're the one that makes the adjustments. The team that won figures, we could just do this. We just beat them by 15, and it wasn't even as close as that final score would indicate. Like, we could just go do the same thing. And the team that loses figures, well, we got to change something up. So then as you get ready for tonight's game, to your point, you wonder about the Warriors either going back to what they did a little bit earlier in the series or throwing out some other curveballs to shake off that terrible taste from Game 5, and then having to wonder, can the Rockets handle whatever Golden State throws at them? Another aspect, too, to me is, and this is like a kind of like a loser attitude. I almost like hate myself for even saying it.
But okay.
The fear that the Warriors kind of handled it almost like the whole gentleman sweep thing.
Yeah.
Veterans, 3-1 lead. They're heading back home for Game 6. Obviously, Kerr pulled his starters, you know, midway through the third quarter. You never want to say in the NBA, especially an elimination game, like, oh, the Warriors, they didn't care about that game. But I do wonder if the intensity, obviously, I think at home, the intensity will be different. But just if you see a different version of the Warriors where they got a little comfortable the other night and now they're a little more locked in at home tonight.
No, I think it's a fair point to make. I understand where you're coming from there with the disclaimer. I think that is fair.
Yeah.
But like, you'll hear kind of NBA folks talking about the idea that that was something that they anticipated for Game 5. Now, of course, it's convenient to say that afterwards, you know, maybe they, and it also feels a little disrespectful to the Rockets to be like, yeah, we expected them to come out and not really play that hard in Houston. Mm-hmm. But one thing that you could say, if you had that perspective, that would be some level of support for that perspective. The Warriors were real lackadaisical with the basketball. And I know I don't want to put all of those like five and men Thompson steals as just the Warriors being lackadaisical. No, he went and took some of those. He picked some pockets. He took some cookies in that way. And I guess that brought me to the idea of how much of that portion of it, especially when it comes to Steph Curry and the ways that they were able to fluster him, do you anticipate carrying over? Particularly because like that transition offense, like being able to steal the ball and go get some pick six type scores, like Amen Thompson did in particular, those also add into the offense, and that's especially valuable for a half court, you know, a team that's so deficient in half court scoring in the Rockets. Like, do you foresee that also carrying along? Because that does still fit in with the defense that you're talking about and the ways in which, you know, Amen Thompson has bloomed as this series has gone through.
That he's the one guy I was going to highlight earlier. That's the one thing I do take from the offensive side of Game 5, that he's played a lot better these last two games. He's gotten better each of the last three. But I also think, I mean, anyone that's played basketball, you know, like when you make a great play on defense, it revitalizes you on the offensive end too. You just feel good. You have a confidence about you. So when he's making those plays on defense, I don't think it's a coincidence that he went off and had such a good game on the offensive end too, that they just play off of one another, especially confidence-wise. So you hope to see a similar performance from him tonight on both ends of the floor, of course, and they're going to need it. But That's really the only thing I take from the offensive side is what he did, and it was great to see him in with the performance the last two games. I've seen some people also point to, like, fatigue for the Warriors.
Yeah.
Talk about the whole travel schedule. But, you know, that, of course, favors the Rockets, and that could continue on now in Game 6 of the series. So that's another reason I've seen people use that as an excuse, but I would almost think that that's more reason to be optimistic for the Rockets. Even though the Warriors starters got to sit a lot to try to refresh those legs, still, it's a flight. It's one day off. The Rockets would certainly benefit from any fatigue the longer this series goes.
Right, and also, you know, they're also dealing with their star player having this very noticeable injury that became a subplot of Game 5, as people claim that, you know, that Dylan Brooks was out here and intentionally trying to further harm him or aggravate that injury, which Dylan Brooks did not do very much to dissuade. In fact, he kind of just copped to it, like, hey, y'all keep talking about what y'all talking about. That's fine. So, yeah, I do think that that is a continued portion of this is like what Warriors team or how much do they have in the tank as the series continues on, as the Rockets' physicality, they've been aggressors in this. And actually, that ties in nicely. I know Matt Young of the Houston Chronicle was kind of throwing up some things that the Rockets need to do in order to survive through Game 6 and give a Game 7 in Sunday. It's kind of funny to think we're going to go into this weekend not knowing if the Rockets will be done in 6, be done in 7, or if they have whole new life by the next time we get on air.
Yeah.
But some of the things he talked about was pester Steph Curry, which is, I mean, that's just been foundational and fundamental to this series. He also talked about the double bigs and continuing to see that, and we've talked at length about that. It feels like one of the things I've been impressed by is that they've been able to use it, and to the extent that they've been able to use it, keeping their cool is going to be an interesting one because it's going to be absolutely necessary. I feel like Draymond Green is going to be as empowered as ever. Like, if he did not get, he's not received the level of punishment that it feels like he should have. And Game 4 on this same court that they're going to be playing tonight was where he had gotten the maximum egregious and still didn't get thrown out. I do wonder if he's going to be emboldened to do all of those shenanigans again. And if, you know, if a elimination type circumstance would put the Rockets on the edge and how they will handle that circumstance.
I think it's a safe bet. And I like all three of those points. I agree with them. I think the last one that you were just talking about is the biggest one because that's been the test for this team. I mean, the Warriors obviously are so much more experienced. And I heard them talking about it, you know, Seth and Sean earlier, about when you watch this series, I mean, the Rockets really have looked like the better team. The difference is just that experience. The Rockets have outscored the Warriors.
Yeah, I was like, they're plus five, isn't it? Or is it 15 or something to that, over the entirety of the series, even though they're down 3-2?
Because a stat I've heard you reference in the series was those clutch minutes. Like, they outplay them for the majority of the game, but then at the end of the game, they just can't execute well enough to pull out these close wins. So now you really ramp that up tonight where it's in their building. Elimination game is a little different playing at home the other night to playing on the road. That's why I'd asked also earlier this. I was thinking about, you know, does that game the other night change the pressure for the Rockets heading into this one? Because now you go back on the road, you feel good coming off that win the other night. But yeah, absolutely. That's the big thing for me is how do these young guys handle this moment? You mentioned it earlier. Role players always play better at home. That's the big difference between stars and role players. And the Rockets, I'm not going to call them a team of role players, but we know they don't have that go-to guy that can carry them. And so tonight, you know, you're going to have to get some big performances from these guys, and we're going to have to find out if they're capable of doing that in really the biggest game of their careers.
Yeah, that's a great point. We can dig more into that. The one thing I want to ask you real quick before we go here on this segment, getting going on a Thursday, when it comes to Jalen Green, he's been such an interesting bellwether of how things go, or, I mean, at least he's been up and down in his performance. And I think that you could probably call Game 5 a generally good performance. I know statistically it does not look great, but I think that he played a much better brand of basketball. And he also took a knock at one point, right, with his knee. I think he actually knocked knees on a drive, and that caused him to sit down. Just, I guess, quickly, do you anticipate good Jalen or bad Jalen, in a way, to oversimplify the analysis of what Game 6 looks like for him?
I would lean more towards bad. And I guess just based off of what we've seen in the series, you know, that's the safer bet, at least in terms of the output for points. I don't expect a huge night from him. I do think Amen Thompson will have a good night. You know, Alpi's been great all series. But no, unfortunately, I'm out. I was already out on Jalen Green, and now this series has just really confirmed it for me, which is why I think, you know, clarity sometimes can always be the best thing. And that's something I think a positive you could still take from this series, even if the Rockets lose tonight, is I think you have the answer. At least I believe I have the answer on Jalen Green, and it's that I can't count on him in these moments.
Man, excited for game six of this series. The Rockets continue to try and stave off elimination and push this thing to a game seven as we're just getting going. It's going to be a fun weekend in Houston sports, and we're considering all of it right here in the loop on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us. Coming up next, at the risk of doing the thing that we did last year, the five-headed monster thing, is it possible that the Texans now have the best wide receiver trio in the AFC? 713-572-4610. Let's consider that next. Happy Friday to you. We're making it through the week and headed to a fun sports weekend. You're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Appreciate you rocking with us. Luke Morrow in for the OG John Lopez. I'm Reginald Attula. That is Figgy Fig on the ones and twos making it sound good. Let's keep going on a Friday as we move towards what is going to be a very fun game six. I am speaking that out into the ether. Actually, would you prefer if it's not fun? Because I did see someone yesterday, especially watching, which one of those games was it? Was it, it was the game where a team was eliminated yesterday in the NBA.
The Knicks and the Pistons?
Yes, Knicks, Pistons, where they were like.
That was a crazy game.
I saw someone on Twitter like, look, Rockets. Decide early if you're going to win or not. Mm-hmm. Don't do that to me. So I guess let us know. 713-572-4610. Would you prefer it to just be one way or the other where you know? Or do you just want to have a crazy game that goes to the end?
Yeah, pretty much. Do you want Steph Curry to hit a three to take the lead with like, what, 15 seconds left?
It doesn't have to be that way. But yes, fair enough. That is what way
that's
you
pretty
say
much
it.
What happened,
that
man.
Is what happened.
Jalen Brunson.
Bad man. Maybe we'll talk about that. But yes, fun weekend, but I kind of want to go and talk about the Texans. Obviously, nothing immediately pressing when it comes to things on the schedule for the Texans at this point, but we now have rookies in. We have kind of we're starting to get a feel for what this roster will look like coming up. Obviously, there's still going to be camp and minicamp, rookie minicamp, mind you, starting next Thursday. But, we've still got things that will help us determine what the actual 53-man roster looks like. But at the very top end, you kind of have an idea of what it looks like. And thankfully, especially for the likes of our guy, Larian Stafford, and people like him who were like, get CJ weapons. They did that. There are weapons. The likes of Jaden Higgins, Jalen Noel come in wide receiver-wise. And one of those guys basically steps in as wide receiver three into the starting lineup with, I imagine, right? I don't think it'd be Mechie or Hutchinson, but I guess I should not assume that. But, you know, one of those large group of guys steps in wide receiver three, and you have, with Nico Collins and Christian Kirk, a pretty solid three-man wide receiving core, wide receiver trio. Luke, where do you think that stands in the AFC? Because it feels like you have some real high regards for this.
Yeah, I think it might be the best, or have the chance to be the best. I should say that, because I do think there's a wide variance for both the wide receiving core and even the offensive line for the Texans. You know, maybe Kirk continues to have injury issues this year, and Higgins maybe takes a little time to develop. And, you know, you never know with rookies. Obviously, they could go either way. They could be really good, or, of course, they could be bust. So there's just a wide range of outcomes. But I think the ceiling for the Texans for this wide receiving core is pretty high, and high enough to the point where it's not unreasonable to have the conversation. In fact, they might be the answer for the best trio in the AFC. I know, I think it was Jameson Williams, somebody on the Lions said, we got the best receivers in the NFL. Yeah, maybe, but that's over in the NFC. In the AFC, could be the Texans. And it sounds ridiculous. It sounds like a homer take, but then you sit down and you think about it. I mean, who are even the best duos in the AFC? And then you try to extend that one further to the top three, and I don't know who else you could come up with. Now, Mike Clay at ESPN put out a ranking of the best units in football, every unit. And even he put the Texans for wide receivers, he has them third in the AFC, behind the Ravens and the Colts. So maybe those are two teams to look at. But I think it has a chance to be the best trio in the AFC if these guys do hit their ceiling this year.
Yeah, it's interesting. It seems like Ocho also weighing in. He's got Bengals and Dolphins in there when you talk about trios. But yeah, the Ravens and Colts both. What immediately stands out to me in a distinction and difference from what the Texans have, and I guess the Texans being in a better place, is just the high end is different. Where you talk about the best wide receiver of the trio, the one who's probably going to carry the most respect and maybe bend the way that defenses play them, is Nico Collins. And it's head and shoulders above what the Colts and the Ravens are going to be putting out there. When you talk about, I mean, who are you even considering that for the Colts in that instance. But I mean, with the Ravens, who like Zay Flowers, I don't mean to say that in such a tone as to dismiss him. I just feel like we are talking about very different atmospheres of player if you're comparing him in any way to Nico Collins.
Yeah, you know, for the Ravens, you have Flowers, Bateman, DeAndre Hopkins would be their three. Yeah, I agree. I think that's a good point, though, that Nico is the best of the bunch for those teams mentioned. I would take him over anyone on the Colts. I would take him over anyone on the Ravens. And most teams in the AFC. So you do have that high end. And then if the other guys meet the expectations, then you really do have a solid blend of three guys you can rely on. And you have good size at the wide receiver position, which, of course, is important. You have a game changer in Nico Collins. And then you have the depth. I mean, you check all of the boxes. I think that's the difference, where you look at some of these other teams, and they might not check all of those boxes that I just laid out. They might have one guy, or they may not have the high-end talent, but they have some depth. I think the Texans have a chance to have a top-five receiver, and then if Christian Kirk, you know, can get back to where he was his first couple years in Jacksonville, and if you get something out of one of the rookies who could have a good year as a number three wide receiver, you really certainly could be looking at the best trio. The Colts, by the way.
Michael Pittman probably is who you go for.
Yeah, as the number one. Pittman, Pierce, and who, Josh Downs, right? I mean, if
depending
Texans,
on how you feel about A.D. Mitchell in within true. That, if you want to kind of make him in there. But, yeah, I'm the top end just does not do it for me.
No.
But I guess in this instance, when you say a trio, it has to be the way that they all fit together. And we got some kind of anonymous scouts talking in. I think Mike Sandel put this together for The Athletic about various teams' draft and, you know, kind of getting perspectives into it. And one of the things that I found interesting when they were talking about the Texans, and one of the execs talked about how, you know, last year or this year you have Tank Dell coming off the injury, Stephon Diggs not there. When Dell gets, you know, healthy, which maybe this season, maybe, you know, the season after, you pair the receivers that you have with Nico Collins, and CJ Stroud has weapons galore. He goes further to say, you don't have the physical enough, or you don't have physical enough corners to cover 2 6-4 receivers. And I think that's the thing that really opens this up for me, is like the dynamic way that this wide receiver core is built right now, where I think myself and B. Scott were talking about it maybe in a break yesterday, because someone had texted in, maybe even if you go four wide a decent amount. And I was like, I don't know how much you'll go four wide, but if you go four wide, and let's just assume that you go with locked in guys in Collins and Kirk, and then you add in the two rookie wide receivers out of Iowa State, when you talk about Higgins and Knoll, right, you got basically mirrored situations there, where I got 2 6-4 dudes that, you know, are pretty smooth and athletic and great hands, and then I got two dudes that have a great amount of speed and could probably route you up a decent amount. And I go, who has the personnel to handle this? And I think that is the place where it gets a little bit different than what the 713 is implying, because you're not wrong, right? They said literally the exact same conversation as last year, and it didn't pan out the same way. And I think there's some things that are different, and obviously one of those will be the offense and the way it's called, but I can't say that.
What kind of offense?
Yeah, yep.
What's the offense we got?
Question mark. And that's the thing I can't say definitively, but I do think it'll be different. Now, what does different mean? I can't tell you, but the thing that I know will be different is the profile of guys that you have and the ways in which they should be able to test the defense. And I think that gives me some optimism, some very significant optimism, that this will have a better chance of going off than it did last year.
I'm with you, and it should provide that optimism. I think you should be excited for this bunch that they've put together. And I get the point, the perspective of that texture, and I would agree, but I'd also look back at last year compared to this year, and I don't know, maybe this is a hot take, but I think if we're talking high end, if Christian Kirk hits his ceiling, I think I would take that over Stephon Diggs going into last year.
Ooh.
I think that would be a better output than what Diggs was expected to give last year. And I think, again, maybe a hot take, if, say, Jaden Higgins hits his ceiling, and these might be big ifs, but I think he could be more productive than what Tank Dell gave you last year. So I think that's why I've been couching this whole conversation, because it does depend on if these guys hit that. I don't worry about Nico Collins, but I worry about Christian Kirk. I worry about, of course, the rookies, because they're the unknown.
And the only way you worry about Nico Collins is, does he have enough support to where defenses can't just completely throw all their attention on him?
True. So that's why I think there's a wide variance. Because if worst case scenario, if everything goes to crap and these rookies need some time to develop and Kirk is still banged up and you can focus on Nico, which affects his output, that wouldn't be a good thing. But high end, all these guys perform as well as they could be capable, I think it's a better wide receiving core than it was last year. And to the texter's point, we can have the same conversation again because I just don't think there's a lot of great wide receiving cores in the AFC still.
No, and I mean, that's going to be if – okay, so ultimately the thing about it, and I understand where that skepticism lies, and I think one of the undercurrents of that is all of the output is so dependent on other things, right? Typically, a wide receiver just in general, their output is dependent on a quarterback. You're not worried about the quarterback himself, but what the quarterback looked like with a bad offensive line was a problem last year. What the quarterback looked like with a scheme and a system that did not feel like it was malleable enough for the circumstances and the situations was problematic. And so I think ultimately, even this question that we're asking, you have the talent, and I know that you're leaving the room open for, you know, the possibility of ranges of outcomes. Those outcomes still feel dependent on, did you figure out enough? Did throwing a whole bunch of offensive linemen at this fix the problem? Did getting Nick Caley in and having Cole Popovich ascend to the role of offensive line coach, the head offensive line coach, does that solve the problem? Because if it does, I think then you have the opportunity to really play with all the toys that you've been able to assemble. There we go.
Assemble, yeah. That's it, yeah. No, and I'm with you on that, too. It all comes back to that offensive line and even whatever scheme we are going to get from the offensive coordinator. I don't know if you can consider the quarterback in this conversation, but I think that's another advantage for the Texans that obviously give me Stroud over anybody on the Colts. I would take Stroud over Tua in Miami. That was another team that was mentioned for the wide receiving corps. So it's not only about having the talent at that position, but then also having the guy that can cash in and capitalize on that talent, and that helps the Texans in this conversation too, because Stroud, again, if he's at his ceiling, is right up there with pretty much any other quarterback, most of the quarterbacks in the AFC.
Yeah, you're in the loop right here on Sports Radio 610. Luke Morrow in for the OG John Lopez here on a Friday. Coming up next, I saw Rob Torres on the YouTube ask, what's the question of the day? I got it for you. Coming up next is time for the question of the day. We got some of those events in sports coming up that are very popular, but I also very much know that some of my contrarian friends are like, I'm not in on it. So in honor of that, what is a thing or an event that is just really popular and you're just like, nope, I don't rock with it. I don't really enjoy it. 713-572-4610. Let's be contrarians together. Next. A great point on the text line about our last segment where we're talking about the Texans having a top of the AFC type wide receiver trio. They made the assertion the Texans only have the second best wide receiver trio in the AFC South. When you talk about the Jags having Calvin Ridley, Brian Thomas Jr., and Travis Hunter. And it does feel like Travis Hunter will primarily be a wide receiver. The question I do have is just how many games does he get to play? Like the physicality of it, of doing both at the same time is going to be interesting.
You said Calvin Ridley?
Yes. Isn't it Calvin Ridley out that way? No.
I don't know. I forgot he was on that team if he was.
Because I was like, Calvin Ridley made his way to Tennessee, didn't he? Is he still there?
Yeah, I think he's still. Let me check.
Yeah, I think he's still with the Titans. Anyways, let's get into the question of the day. Let's be haters, because what I'm finding out about my co-host for the day, Luke Morrow, Luke got some hate in him, all right? So I just want to be a little bit of a hater, but inspired by a little bit of the Kentucky Derby is this weekend, and it is an American sports cultural touch point. And I'm going to be honest, I am always fascinated that we as a collective sports media talk so much about it just because I don't know how much it actually lands with the general America sports viewing public. And so I wondered in honor of that, and also shout out to Kix Rocks who was talking about the schedule release, and he's like, I just don't get the appeal. So in that honor, the question of the day has to do with, you know, those things or events that you just aren't in on, even though they're really popular. 713-572-4610. Because the Kentucky Derby is one of those for me, 100% absolutely. I'm just like, it's cool. And then here's the tough thing about it, right? Is even if I was a gambler, which I think if you listen consistently, you know, I'm not really mm-hmm. a gambler. But also, the actual event takes like a couple of minutes.
Yeah.
Except NBC got a broadcast going for, I think the actual time is about 17 hours on that day. And it's just like, why are we doing so much lead up to this? I don't need to see Tom Brady's suit for this particular event. Like, why do we have so much of this?
Yeah. It's kind of like your first time in bed. It's like 16 years of lead up, and then it's just a couple minutes. And
that
you're
is
like,
a wild comparison, but okay, yes.
And you're like, wow, this is what all the buildup is for.
Yep, that is fair.
Am I alone on that? So you don't
no
watch?
No comment.
You don't watch the Kentucky Derby, or do you watch it?
Well, I try to tap in as close to the actual race as I can.
Yeah.
I'll put it like this. If I miss it, it won't hurt my feelings. Well, I'm just like, all right, well, that's fine.
That's fair. I do gamble on it every year, and that's really the only reason, for the most part, why I'm into it. So I guess that's fair. But I do like the Kentucky Derby. I don't watch the build-up. So, ironically, that's one of the things that I am into. But I don't know. There's a lot of other things. I agreed with Sean's list earlier. Award shows, certainly, that's come up. Those are terrible. Yeah, terrible. That's such a waste of time. there's something else for your Sunday night.
What? Yeah. See, the thing I will say about award shows, I feel like some of them, like especially if you're looking to them for validation at times, it can be problematic. I do appreciate getting the insider's perspective on something, especially considering I'm not able to tap into everything. And I think this probably speaks more to the film aspect of it.
Mm-hmm.
And not to say that they are always great about it. In fact, I think there was recently some discovery that some of the folks in the Academy have admitted to just kind of taking the screeners that they have and hitting play on them. Just like you do with your work training videos where you're I'm not actually watching this. I'll hit play on it so that they can see that I watched it, and then we'll do that, which would probably do a little bit to invalidate some of the results. But I do appreciate, all right, well, this thing clearly has a level of respect amongst his peers. Maybe this is worth checking out and watching. And so sometimes that'll be a valuable thing for me. Also, just the entertainment value of a cultural touchstone. But yes, I think that it is fair to then talk about how this might be a little overrated.
I don't really like, I'm kind of out on birthdays. I don't really like birthdays.
What?
Yeah.
Like birthdays in general?
Like birthday parties?
Like the whole celebration of birthdays. Right, come on, enough with that. And then when it's your birthday, it turns into a job. You spend the whole day having to respond to everybody.
You are kind of cooking with this one.
Yeah.
Like, let's turn the birthday into
this. This is good hating right
now.
So
you wouldn't have a birthday party for yourself?
No, never.
And I agree. I never have a birthday party.
I'm down with that. Yeah.
Because I don't want to do the planning. That is a fair point. Because it is like, all right, well, I'm doing something for my birthday. Like, even if it's just like, we're going to go out and get dinner. All right, well, I made reservations. I need a head count. How many people are trying to go? I need to put in this reservation. I'm always just like, I don't want to do it.
I'm at a point where I don't want to celebrate me. I don't want to make it about me.
Yeah.
Like, hey, guys, my birthday, and this is where I want to go. And I don't really care for that, man.
It's the worst. I hate when people even just put it out there. Like, they'll tweet, you know, today's my birthday. Or you walk around the office and they'll not, like, who cares? Everyone has a birthday. You have a birthday every year. Like, what's the big deal? Why are we? And so I don't like making my birthday about myself, but then I also don't like having to plan someone else's birthday because the pressure on that. So I'm just out on the whole, let's have birthdays. We can have cake. We can say happy birthday. You know, get a card. That's all good and well, but we don't need these big extravagant celebrations.
You got to put some money on Luke when it's birthday. Just pin some money on you.
Oh, yeah. And get him like one of them birthday hats. We got to just make it a big deal. Just to annoy you.
Yeah.
And I imagine also no flowers for birthdays as well. Just like first dates. Yes.
Maybe by like the third birthday together. Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Not the first birthday. Come on.
Yeah, that's right. No flowers in the whole first year. What are you doing? Figgy. Right. Do you have something that is popular but you're just not in on?
Yeah, I got a couple things. These are some smaller things. This one is not an event, even though they're trying to make it an event, but the whole pumpkin spice thing.
Yes.
Ooh, that's a good point.
Yeah, I'm out of air. Like, nah, I'm good on that, man.
Amen.
I feel like now it's becoming a season where around September, I think they making it a little earlier now, especially at Starbucks, where it's like, it's that time of the year.
Mm-hmm.
Pumpkin spice. And I'm just like, nah, I'm out of that. Another event that is one of those, to me, those celebrity events where, I don't know what to call it, but the Met Gala.
Ah, yes.
I just don't understand it at all, man. They be wearing some stupid stuff and people just build this up so much. It's like, I don't even give a damn about this. Like, I do not care. I don't care if you rocking a fish tank on top of your head. Like, I do not care about that. But the one that I'm probably going to piss people off with this one.
Uh-oh. Okay. All right.
I'm not a fantasy football guy, man.
Ah,
you're just not buying the hype there.
Like, I understand it, but I just feel like I don't feel like getting into it. I don't know if it's a thing just being lazy. But the one I really don't like is...
had a list.
Talking about it is... like when ESPN talk about it, they make it like a whole event. Like, this is
fancy.
I'm just like, who? Like, I don't want to sit here and look at Adam Schefter on who I should draft if I'm playing. to me, that's just overboard, man.
Yeah, I think that that's fair, especially if you're not invested in it. But yeah, I think also it's probably more that it's become kind of the kind of center of the conversation as opposed to being like, oh, well, this is a fantasy football thing right over there. It's like, yeah, no, this is a whole block of hours, right?
ESPN is trying to make it like a big event. Like, uh-oh, like let's make this look like the NFL draft and all of these players mm-hmm. on the ticker and all this other stuff. I'm like, man, I ain't trying to watch that.
From the A32 weddings, now I got to go buy a suit and a wedding present for a decision that you made? Wow, that's real hater stuff right
but
there.
But you can make the argument for the other side of it. Like, doing a whole wedding, like, paying for people, like, that stuff is expensive. Like, all of the meals and the plates. Like, nah, I got to do all this because I want to get married.
I do think that we have crossed the Rubicon when it comes to weddings at times. Like, I very much would imagine that we probably could keep this a little bit lighter when we go to a party that we're trying to do to celebrate this union. We don't have to go as extravagant, or we don't need to do like the multi-day event, right? Like, we don't mm-hmm. have to do a festival wedding or what have you. Like, we can make this a little bit more rangy.
Yeah, it should.
Yeah, you doing all of this for everybody else.
Absolutely. You're throwing a party for
And I'm wondering, I'm sure some people that got married do have a good time on their wedding day, but are you really having a good time to spend all of that money?
Yeah, worrying about your relatives and everyone getting along, and this person has a request.
Like, are you actually sitting here eating the meal, or are you just sitting here, thank you for coming to my wedding, thank you for coming, hugging everybody? Like, are you really having that much of a good time?
I would say the meals would be what I would put on the list. The meals at these weddings, they're never great. It's always about, you got to have a good cocktail hour with some good appetizers, and then it's all about the dessert at the end. And that's the wedding cake, fair. Too. Wedding cake stinks, too. But you got to have a good dessert table or cart.
That is fair. I think that I have been to a few weddings where the catering has been good, but I think by and large,
it's just the dry chicken breasts.
Yeah, come on.
Well, I don't even know if it's dry, but it's just like the occasion is not such that you come. Like, it's not one of those where you go, I'm coming without having eaten nothing because I'm ready to dig in at this wedding. Like, that's just not how this thing is ultimately going to be played out. Some other ones that have come in here on the text line. Somebody said that they are out on all golf events, especially without Tiger. And I feel like at the very least, the Masters is one where it's big enough, like it's beautiful enough where mm-hmm. I think that I mean, even if I was like anti-golf, I would still tap in. But I kind of understand that perspective. It's a very niche sport. Right. Yeah. Like, I think that I understand anybody that's like, hey, the niche sports, when they get their particular jump up. Right. Some people have like the Daytona 500 as one of those. Right. Yeah. The big event for a relatively niche sport. Right. I get how jumping into that and trying to pick up all of the very unique to that sport stuff when you're just parachuting in can be like unflattering at times.
Yeah. One thing I'm out on festivals. Just music festivals.
Interesting.
Yeah, it don't look fun going.
Yeah.
Because it's so many people, so much traffic, no bathrooms, and everything is high. Mm-hmm. And even just watching online, it just don't sound good.
How far do you take that to? Because you could bring that to some concerts as well. So
I'm not a stadium concert guy.
You're not a concert guy. Okay.
I'm not a stadium concert guy. I like smaller little venues, more intimate. But if one of my favorite artists was performing at NRG Stadium, I'm like, man, I don't feel like going, walking up these ramps and being up high in the nosebleeds and all this other stuff.
Fighting traffic on the way out.
Yeah, it's too much, man.
Yep. Gender reveals also, put that on the list. Terrible.
Someone said they're out on bowling. Are you out on like going and bowling or watching bowling? Because I feel like being out on the activity of bowling is crazy. Like, that's probably one of the best American, like, Friday night staples, like just going to the bowling alley.
Yeah.
What?
Even if you suck, it's still a good.
It's a great time.
It's a great time. Yeah.
Some would argue it's more fun bowling when you have a whole bunch of people that are bad at it.
True.
Yeah.
For sure. And unfortunately, though, bowling's kind of been hit pretty bad by, I guess, inflation. It used to be so cheap to go bowling.
It's so expensive to go bowling.
Now you go bowling. Why is my gosh, they give you the worst shoes, and you got to pay like $20 just to wear them for an hour. Terrible.
Yeah.
Somebody said parades are the worst.
Yeah, I don't like parades.
Yeah, I hadn't really considered that, but especially like you in this one spot catching this go by. And usually like the real exciting part is, you know, a short period of time. You spend all this time getting out
hey,
here.
There they go.
Unless it's
there
unless it's go. A yeah.
Right. Then it's gone. It. Yeah.
But the parades that are different are just like championship parades because it's not necessarily about seeing the team go by. It's about the jubilation
just
of
being
all these
there.
People.
It's a big party.
In the same space.
Yeah. It's like a less exciting Kentucky Derby. All the buildup, and then it's just like, oh, okay, it was over in 2 minutes.
Yeah, I guess that is fair.
And there was no winner.
Bringing that back around.
Yeah.
that going in 2 minutes. All right, you're in the loop here on Sports Radio 610. I very much want to circle back to the fact that Luke Morrow is just one of the biggest haters I've ever seen in my life, and he's unrepentant about it. It's very good. But coming up next, let's go around the NFL. We'll talk about some of the things that are happening in the NFL, including we have post-draft power rankings, where the Texans fall. We'll do it next.